The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you on the 9 till noon show today, standing in for Greg Hughes for the next 2 days. We have a packed show. And if you were listening to Michaela on the news with her audio from last night's meeting of the People's Document, then there'll be lots more on that. We'll have a special package on the programme in about 10 minutes' time, so do stay tuned for that. Some very interesting voices and very interesting perspectives coming from that meeting. If you want to get in touch with the programme and let us know your views, you can do so, of course. Text us on 086 60 25000. You can call us on 074 91 25000, 00353 74 91 25000, if you're outside of the dialing area. Donna Marie is producing and taking your calls. Shannon taking calls on the programme this morning as well. You can use social media, of course. It's Highland Hub on Facebook. It's at Highland Radio on X. You can email comments at highlandradio.com, and you can also engage in other ways. Watch the show, of course, on our Facebook pages and also on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. So lots of ways to interact with and communicate with the programme, and we're very anxious, as we say, to reflect the views of the people. So please do do so. And Darren's done so already. And Darren, I was speaking to Lee, and I told Lee I thought Shaky was a little bit younger than Lee thought. Well, Darren has informed me that Shaken Stevens is 76, and I have to say he looks darn well for it, because I was watching him on Video Play Live last year, and he was giving it socks. And I think the music Shaky has made in the past couple of years, quite frankly, is the best music he's made in his career. Some absolutely wonderful music coming from Shaken Stevens. His most recent album, check it out. It is brilliant. And a lot of friends of mine from back in the day would be very surprised to hear me say that, believe me. Let's take a look at the papers and see what the papers are saying this morning. Finn Valley Voice, fair distribution of council funds. Councillor Patrick McGowan, a proposal at Monday's Donegal County Council meeting in Lifford is intended to develop a plan to distribute the council's funding and resources more fairly to all towns and villages across the country. The motion was moved by Councillor Patrick McGowan. Now, you're always going to get discussions at Donegal County Council level along these lines, because what happens is you're going to get the claim, Letterkenny and Inishowen get everything. Then you're going to get the counterclaim, well, Letterkenny and Inishowen are the centres of population, they have the most people. Then you'll get the every electoral area should get the same, every municipal district should get the same, and there's going to be all sorts of debates and discussions, and a big debate and discussion about this issue at the meeting that took place there on Monday as well. And you can read all about that in the Finn Valley Voice. Donegal Post this morning: sperm whale washed ashore at Glencullum Kill, likely to be immature male. Siobhan McNamara writes that the 13.5-metre sperm whale that washed ashore at Onthrovore in Glencullum Kill has been attracting much attention. It's unlikely its cause of death will be determined. The Inish Times this morning: survey reveals phenomenal need for Carndonagh day services. The group calling for the restoration of day services at Carndonagh Community Hospital says a survey shows huge need for the services. They stopped more than 4 years ago, when the services in Carn, among many services which it's claimed were stopped during COVID and have never been properly and fully restored. We hear a lot about it from Councillor Albert Doherty, of course, a member of the Western Regional Forum with the HSE, and from others as well. Tony Doherty, campaign group chair, of course, also speaking regularly about this issue. And there are calls on Minister of State for Mental Health and Older People, Mary Butler, to reach out and engage with local people to try and come to some resolutions here. Let's move on to the Nationals. Irish Independent this morning: woman and two girls latest to die in carnage on roads. Horrific story. The death of a woman and two young girls in a crash on the N17 led to widespread shock. Gardaí last night continued efforts to contact overseas relatives of the victims. The woman was aged in her 30s. The girls were both under 10. The crash brings to 52 the number of people killed on Irish roads this year. That's 10 more than for the same time period last year. And we know that the Road Safety Authority are working toward what they call Zero 50, whereby 2050 they want zero road deaths in this country. This year is hopefully going to prove to be an anomaly, but certainly when you have, before March is out, 10 more road deaths than you had the previous year. There are certainly issues out there. Also on the front of the Irish Independent, a horrific photograph of the container ship that hit a bridge in Baltimore, and six construction workers are now missing, feared dead. They are heroes, is the headline underneath. Crew of ship in Baltimore bridge collapse raised, hailed for raising the alarm before tragic crash. And I would take a certain interest in ships and marine life, and it's a horrific photograph of fully laden container ship, and the damage it's done to the bridge is, to say the least, significant. A very similar picture from a slightly different angle on the front of the Irish Times this morning. Six missing after bridge collapse. A cargo ship has crashed into one of the bridge's two central support pylons, and a picture there as well. Main story on the front page of the Times: immigration plan aims to limit hotel use. You'll have heard Michaela reference this on the news this morning as well. The government's landmark new immigration plan will commit to avoiding the use of the last hotel in a town to accommodate asylum seekers. Integration Minister Ruaidhrí Gorman is bringing the long-awaited plan to Cabinet later today, alongside measures to overhaul immigration procedures, which are coming from the Justice Minister, Helen McEntee. However, in the time being at least, the state will still be depending a lot on hotels, so we're told by the Irish Daily Mail. I'm not debated by the Irish Times, excuse me. Now, the Irish Daily Mail, very similar story. Phraseology is different. Crackdown on immigration. Refugees who arrive without a passport will be fast-tracked in overhaul of our system, but changes will take up to 2 years, Aisling Maloney writes in the Mail. Slightly different perspective on the same story. Also, mother and two young daughters die in crash. And Harry dragged into rape lawsuit against rapper. And there's a story inside one of the rappers in the US. I've seen the story. Don't want to give a name because I seem to recall a name, but don't want to say what it is unless it's a different name. Yes, it is. It's P. Diddy or Sean Diddy Combs. But apparently Prince Harry... appeared with him once in a picture, and apparently Prince Harry is now part of the investigation. Strange one. Irish Daily Star this morning, latest Rhodes horror moment, her girls killed, a mother and her two young girls were killed in a horror head-on crash between a car and a lorry yesterday. The woman and the two children died on the N17 close to Claremorris in County Mayo. It's a road I travel a fair bit myself, it's a road I know, and... you know, it's a wide road, and it's a road on which the traffic moves quite quickly. It doesn't bear thinking about. The Irish Sun this morning, mum and two girls die in crash. That's a smaller story, as is the Harry named in sex traffic case. Affiliation with and or sponsorship of Mr. Coombs' sex trafficking parties garnered legitimacy and access to celebrities such as famous athletes, political figures, artists, musicians and international dignitaries like British Royal Prince Harry. I love this sort of Prince in P. Diddy link on the basis that he once appeared in a photograph with him. And the photograph, they're two slightly, well, they're taken at, in the same place, but there's two pictures, one on the Mail, one on the Irish Sun. They're both the same, wearing the same clothes, which is the same time, but different photographs. And if having your photograph taken with someone once over the course of your life links you to them forever, then we all have some very strange and tenuous links, I suspect. Irish Daily Mirror this morning, another road tragedy is the main story. Mum and two girls killed in crash. Bridge plunge horror again, that Baltimore story. And it's hit and Swiss for O'Shea as boss. John O'Shea, former Man United and Ireland star, has taken interim charge of Ireland over the two games over the past couple of days. A draw with Belgium, a 1-0 defeat to Switzerland. O'Shea appears to be suggesting he would like to take the top job. Whether that happens or not remains to be seen. But we will keep an eye on the situation and see what happens there. Other names being bandied about as well, with the FAI believed to be speaking to some people. Lee Carsley definitely ruling himself out anyway, says he, as he tries to pretend he actually knows something about football. He knows a bit, but not an awful lot. Just a few comments. Charlie McGarvey, Charlie says that Prince William appeared with him too, but no one's reporting that, funnily enough. And Paul says the anchor wasn't dropped. That might have slowed down impact on a bridge. But now, I do know enough about... I know it takes something like if you start to stop a ship, if a ship is moving and you start to stop it from full speed, you are talking at the very least half a mile before it'll stop. At the very least. And the bigger the ship, and that is a heavily laden container ship, you're probably talking it would take a mile to stop it. So I don't know what happened. I haven't read in or looked in enough to it to know what happened, but it's a fairly horrific thing. Now, as I said, Michaela was in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel last night for that significant meeting led by the backers of the People's Document. Michaela has prepared a package for us, and we're going to take a listen to that package after this short break. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It is 20 past nine. Just a few comments. Caller says, we're due to move out of our house in 3 to 6 months due to defective blocks. We have a child with cerebral palsy in a wheelchair. We need to install a hoist and get moving as soon as possible. Our house is going to be demolished. We have nowhere to go. Has anyone any advice? Another caller says, my house is to be demolished this year under the defective block scheme. I'm trying to convert my garage into a living area until my house is done. I can't get an answer if I'm allowed to do that, or do I even need planning permission? It's a nightmare for anyone trying to get a place to live. All I can say is we know that Donegal County Council has dedicated people to help people with Michael queries, and I am all too well aware that people will have gone to them with queries already and haven't got answers as of yet. I can only suggest that you keep trying in the meantime. If anyone out there can offer any answers or any perspectives to our callers, please do feel free to make contact with us. Now, as we said last night, there was over 1,000 people in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel at a public meeting to discuss the People's Document. It's a joint initiative of defective block campaign groups in Donegal. We know that Michael Doherty is supporting it, as is MAG, the Redress Focus Groups, the 100% Redress No Less group, and Paddy Diver has given it his backing as well. Last night was an opportunity for politicians to outline if they were fully supportive of what's contained in the document, which included requests from homeowners at a meeting earlier this month. Now, as we said, Michaela went to that meeting last night for Highland Radio, and she put, as well as the comprehensive news coverage you're going to hear on the news all day today, Michaela also put together a very comprehensive package for the 9 till noon show. So without further ado, I will play you that package now.
There was much applause at a public meeting last night to hear the politicians' view on the People's Document, a joint initiative of defective concrete block campaign groups. There was, however, some disagreement on Sinn Féin's stance. A 1,000-plus strong crowd gathered in Bunkrana, where a published copy of the People's Document was circulated. It sets out four principles: the 100% Redress No Less group, the MICA Action Group, the Redress Focus Groups, and campaigner Michael Doherty believe will deliver 100% redress for the thousands of defective block homeowners in Donegal. The four principles are property, that it is rebuilt like for like at no cost to the homeowner and to current standards. Michael Doherty says this is a basic right. The second principle, process, would ensure an end-to-end scheme delivered by the state with self-build opt-out available. People and support calls for no one to be left behind, and the proper and timely supports are available for homeowners. Finally, prevention, so a crisis like this is never witnessed again, and the government follows the science, that there are proper standards in place, and that there is enforcement and accountability. Some of the proposals put forward by homeowners themselves at a meeting earlier this month include the need for partially built properties to be included in the scheme up to the current stage of completion, and that a study is carried out by the HSE on the respiratory health for defective concrete block families due to the conditions of some properties, which are damp and mouldy, and some people have no choice but to remain living in them. There was much support for calls for the redress scheme to be based on science and not a visual damage threshold, which is affecting a vast number of homeowners.
Where we are at the moment is we are hopefully about a month away from demolishing our home. We spent the last month moving out of our home, clearing out all our possessions, stripping the house out. We've moved to our rental property, which is also defective, by the way. The situation we are in currently is we are going to be out about €100,000 for the rebuild of our home. My parents are retired. My in-laws are retired. They're looking at setting up their lives from now on. I have to turn around to them, cap in hand, looking for money. because no bank is going to give me the entire amount of money I need. We're stuck in a situation now where I'm a fit and healthy guy. I go to the gym. I look after myself. But I'm on blood pressure medication. And my doctor has told me that I will be on that medication for the rest of my days because of the stress this is causing. There's members of my family that are engaging in mental health services and are on medication because of the stress that this is causing. My youngest son is being assessed for autism. The effect on him is unbelievable. And the amount of times I've had to hold my children, hold my wife, while they cry due to just the absolute injustice of this whole situation. We're trying to approach this as adults, myself and my wife, but my kids don't even really understand. They keep asking, who's done this to us? You know, why us? Why are we in this situation? So where we are right now is a pretty dark place. We are somewhat encouraged by the goings on here this evening. The people's document looks like a great thing for all of us. But all too often we've seen politicians that promise you the earth and deliver nothing. So it remains to be seen if they will actually follow through if they are elected.
Darren McDonald there, who lives in Remelton, he's just one of many homeowners who are living in deeply difficult situations. And that was one of the main questions on the night. What are those who are elected in the upcoming local and European elections going to deliver, along with TDs who secure a seat in the next general election? Around 75% of Donegal County councillors were in attendance, with one representative speaking on behalf of each party. Agriculture Minister Charney McConnog was not present at last night's meeting, as he was attending an agriculture and fisheries meeting in Belgium. Senator Niall Blaney confirmed to the MICA Action Group's chair that he would not be in attendance as he was on the campaign trail. Midlands North West MEP Luke Mink-Flanagan, who played a major role in bringing the case of homeowners to European level, sent his apologies but confirmed that he fully supports the document. A number of local election candidates were there and were given a chance to have their say on the document, as well as People Before Profits, a European election candidate for the Midlands North West constituency. Four Donegal deputies took to the stage. Deputy Joe McHugh confirmed that the People's document has been sent to the new Fine Gael leader, Simon Harris. Deputy McHugh believes a scheme that is Taoiseach-led with campaigners at the table is what is needed. He lost the party whip after he opposed the enhanced concrete block redress scheme. Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle fully endorsed the People's document. He believes the current government will not deliver what the people need and believes a change of government is what is needed. Sinn Féin, meanwhile, who were represented by Deputies Padraig McLaughlin and Pierce Doherty, told the public meeting that while the party commits to delivering 100% redress, did not endorse the People's document. Deputy McLaughlin explains why.
We're supporting the initiative. I mean, what we've said tonight is if you are a primary principal residence, which is the vast majority of people, if you are a one property owner, people in, under the current scheme, we will deliver a 100% redress scheme that doesn't involve a grant, that's end-to-end, run by the housing agency. In terms of commercial properties and in terms of, you know, the wider rental, we need to do an analysis of how many houses are you talking about. But the door is open to find a solution for them. So that's our commitment tonight, to work with the campaigners. But the most important thing tonight is, because this was a massive crowd here tonight, and the vast majority of people, we are very clear, there's 100% redress for them, and then we'll work with the other homeowners around a solution for them too.
And in terms of those homeowners, the holiday homeowners, the commercial property owners, is it just that element of the document you don't agree with, or is there other elements?
Yeah, that's the issue. I mean, any self-respecting political party needs to quantify. So, you know, the demand to date has been 100% redress for the homeowners and for the person with one rental property, which are people who are often accidental landlords. Now, in terms of going beyond that, that's a new commitment that you have to quantify, you have to assess how many houses, and then you work out a scheme that would work for them. So we've left the door open, we'll work on that, and we're here to be honest tonight and to be straight, but also to give the vast majority of people hope that there's going to be, you know, a pathway for them and a way that they can rebuild their lives.
And why do you believe Sinn Féin now can deliver in this 100% when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the Greens couldn't, and we know that there's civil servants behind all this?
Well, I think having Piers Doherty here tonight was a big statement of intent from us. We, if we're fortunate, want to lead the next government. If we do, Piers Doherty from Donegal will be the Minister for Finance. Eoghan O'Brien would be the Minister for Housing, somebody who is committed to the principle of redress across the entire state. So our party, if we're fortunate enough to get the support of the people across Donegal and across Ireland, are strongly positioned to deliver the scheme that we've long waited for our people.
88-year-old Dominic Hendrick and his wife own a holiday home in Clonmany. They're one of those holiday home owners who will fall down the list if Sinn Féin's approach is delivered.
It's very badly affected now by MICA. We've had it tested. The situation now is almost falling down. And to repair it, we won't be able to get a loan because it's too old. I'm 88. We can't get a loan to get it repaired. And as a result, we're left in. And according to Sinn Féin, we'd be down the list. And by the time they come round to us, our house is probably falling down around our ears. I agree with this document that we should have equal treatment with everybody else. That's our claim. We spent maybe £6,000 getting all the scientific work done.
The work has been done by the campaign groups in delivering the people's document, for which there was resounding support for at last night's meeting. The hard work continues now to ensure what is contained in the document is delivered for affected homeowners. Campaigner Michael Doherty says the next step now is to get the political support and get the document over the line. He does believe there are brighter days ahead, though.
I think the next step now is to engage constructively with parties on the details of the people's document. I think the four principles at a high level are fine, but underneath that is quite a bit of detail, and they need to understand the implications of the detail. Now, some parties are coming a little bit more cautious, having studied that, because there are, you know, there are big ticket items in there that they've got to decide are they on board or not with. Those that maybe haven't considered it just as much, I think we need to work with them so they know exactly what it is we're talking about in the detail of the people's document, because it is very clear from tonight that the issues around, for example, rental homes, holiday homes, commercials, you know, the policy we have in that people's document of prioritisation, yes, but exclusion, no, has to apply. There's nobody can be left behind, and that is a red line for us. Nobody can be left behind, and you know we understand that the priority levels are different. But in fairness, anybody's in that situation, bought or built in good faith with their own money, and they're entitled to be properly compensated for something that was none of their wrongdoing.
And while we heard so many stories today about people's homes, but there is a message there that we're in the middle of this fight now, but there will someday be light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully.
I honestly believe there will be. I do believe. I think it. I do say it. I'll say it out loud. I'm an affected homeowner myself. I'm going to be about 150,000 short as it stands right now. You know, the people's document is what delivers for me, and I'm just one of many. And that's with me having downsized by 500 square feet. So, you know, I have to believe that there is light at the end of this long tunnel. I think it's going to take a change of government, and that's just been brutally honest. I do agree with the position that this government has given us nothing more than what we've got. I adopted that position a year and a half ago when I was in my final interview after stepping down from the Mike Action Group as PRO with Greg Hughes, and I said that has turned out to be the case. If anything, the departments have tried to whittle away further whatever benefits there might have been with the enhanced scheme. So in fairness to Mike Action Group and to the Redress Focus Groups and to Paddy Diver, they have managed to keep back, you know, and hold on to as many of the benefits that are in there as possible. But the reality for us is that it's so far short of 100% redress, and it's by design. The government designed it in a way that they had a headline that said it's a multi-billion euro scheme, but the reality was going to be only a trickle of houses would ever get fixed. And that's what they did, and I think that's completely unforgivable. And as a result of that, they need to go. We can't have the same government if we want to get the people's document done.
And that was Michael Doherty ending that special report there from Michaela Clark. Michaela attended that meeting that took place last night in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel. And you can hear that report back in full on our website. More from that meeting on the website. And of course, there'll be coverage of that meeting over the course of our news bulletins today as well. There was a big conversation yesterday with Councillor Jerry McMonagall with regards to housing, and one of the issues that came up was the delays in acquiring housing and buying housing by the council because of the need to test for mica and deleterious materials. And comment in, manholes are being replaced at the moment in Coyle and Court in Remelton because they were collapsing because of defective blocks. I wonder, did the council need to test the blocks before replacing them, or did they use a bit of cop-on? So says a caller there. Another caller says, as a defective block homeowner, the People's Document meeting last night in Buncrana was incredible, and a huge sense of gratitude goes out to the organisers, the people who attended, and to the politicians who turned up. I have to say it is disappointing that Charlie McConnellogue and Niall Blaney didn't turn up. The TDs that turned up were open and honest and spoke with conviction. I also believe the Sinn Féin position on the document is sensible and, in fairness, very honest. A huge congratulations to everyone involved, so says one of our callers. The 100% Redress Party have sent us in a comment. The politicians who didn't show up have shown their true colours. Our protest must be at the ballot box. That's the view, as I say, from the 100% Redress Party, so we know where they're coming from. Now, we're going to change to another issue, and it's an issue that was discussed on the programme earlier this week when Greg spoke to Ina Barrett and Seamus Devine from Relay for Life, and Relay that's coming up at the end of May. Joined on Zoom this morning by Amy Nolan, who is a Director of Clinical Services with the Irish Cancer Society. Amy, a very good morning to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's our pleasure, Amy. A lot of talk, Amy, about cancer. Particularly, obviously, we had Daffodil Day last Friday. We're preparing for Relay here in Donegal, and I will declare my interest. I am involved in the Relay Committee and do have an involvement both in terms of the Survivors Choir, and I'm also on the committee, so I will declare that interest openly and upfront. But in terms of one of the things that we do in Relay, and one of the things that the Irish Cancer Society is always trying to do, is to encourage people to talk about cancer. Now, for some people, talking about it is not a problem. But for some, it is. And for some people, they find it difficult to do that. And one of the things you're trying to do is to help and support people to do that a bit more.
Absolutely. Excuse me. Talking about cancer is very difficult. And I think for a lot of people, what they have to do is try and understand the information that they're being given, first of all. So a cancer diagnosis has a huge impact, not just on the patient themselves, but also on their family and the wider community. When you're diagnosed with cancer, there's a whole treatment plan that has to be outlined. You have to understand how that treatment is going to affect you. If you're a younger person and you're trying to manage children or maybe manage older parents and care for them, it can have a huge impact to both your children and also to older people that you're trying to care for as well. So talking about cancer is really important to try and get the support that you need, both from your community, from your extended family, and from your immediate family. I feel that years ago, the word cancer, it was a taboo subject. And people, when they mentioned cancer, there was a huge fear factor. And 30 years ago, it is fair to say that 3 out of 10 people survived a cancer diagnosis, whereas now it's 6 out of 10 people will survive a cancer diagnosis. So because of research, because of improved treatments, things, the survivorship rates have certainly improved. So cancer is not maybe as much of a taboo subject as it would have been years ago.
From the point of view of encouraging people to speak, you're issuing some documents and you're issuing some supports online that will give people tips just to maybe give them that little push, give them that bit of help that they need.
Yeah, we have a fantastic service here with cancer nurses on our support line. And the number is a free phone number. It's 1-800-200-700. And those nurses are there and waiting to take your call between 9 o'clock and 5 o'clock. And they can help you to navigate this conversation or to navigate how you're feeling yourself about your cancer diagnosis. We have a really good resource that I would highly recommend called Talking to Children About Cancer. It is a booklet that you can download on our website, cancer.ie, where you will also find some of the other resources that you have mentioned. I really feel that book is fantastic, not just for parents who have been diagnosed with cancer and they're considering their children, but also grandparents. And, you know, these days grandparents play such a large role in their grandchildren's lives that, you know, talking to them about a cancer diagnosis is equally as important. That's a fantastic guide to try and explain to children what a cancer diagnosis is. And it doesn't have to be big words. It needs to be simple. It needs to be language that they understand. It has to be delivered in an area, in an environment where the children feel comfortable, that they feel they can ask questions and that they feel that they're listened to. So I think that I would really recommend that book for anybody who is experiencing a cancer diagnosis at the moment.
And sometimes the biggest problem is that word, because it's a word. I mean, for years we called it the big C. We were afraid to even
say
the word. And it's come to the point now, and we know that survival rates have increased hugely. Mm-hmm. And it would have been previously seen as that's it. But that's far from the case now.
Far from the case, as I mentioned, 30 years ago, 3 out of 10 people survived. Now it's 6 out of 10 people will survive a cancer diagnosis. And 1 in 2 of us will be diagnosed with cancer in our lifetime. So that's a stark statistic, but it is something that we need to remember. Many of us have probably had, you know, that walking around now have had a cancer diagnosis and survived. And there is, in survivorship as well, it's really important to say that we have some really good educational tools online, in particular the LACES program, which is Living After Cancer Diagnosis, and it helps you to progress after a cancer diagnosis. So when you have completed your treatment and the bubble of the cancer, the hospital is gone, and now you have to progress into survivorship. And what that can be really scary for a lot of people, because that support is gone. And a lot of the time people in the community as well say, well, you're finished your treatment now, you're good, and you've got the all clear, so why aren't you just like back on track and ready to go? But there's huge amount of side effects like fatigue that will take time to build up. And a psychologist I worked with before used to say that you're like a deconditioned athlete. And so a deconditioned athlete would never go straight out and play a match. They have to recondition themselves and take the time to do that. So it's important for those that are in survivorship that they recognise that too.
And we know actually that research co-sponsored by the Irish Cancer Society has taken place in Letterkenny University Hospital, looking at that, looking at the health and well-being of people who have had a diagnosis, looking at exercise, looking at how they live their lives and their lifestyle during the treatment, so that after the treatment they'll be in that peak optimal condition. And hopefully that research that started a couple of years ago will become the template by which people can be advised, look, this is what you do to get yourself back into peak condition as quickly as possible.
And prehabilitation, as you described there through that research, is key in that as well, so that you're preparing your body and your mind actually to get through this treatment and through the other side and survivorship then as well. So that research is invaluable. And from Daffodil Day, you know, there last Friday, we are very lucky with the people that support us all around the country, including our Relay for Life committees around the country. Without that, we could not do the research that we're doing. We couldn't progress the survivorship rates that is happening. So research is really important in cancer. We're the largest voluntary funder of cancer research in Ireland, and we're really proud of that.
Important too to acknowledge that at the hospital in Letterkenny, and there are centres elsewhere as well, the Daffodil Centre is a centre which very often maybe doesn't get the recognition it deserves and the publicity it deserves, but the Daffodil Centre is there for people to engage with and get some advice. And maybe sometimes if you need to talk to someone that you don't know, if you need to talk to someone that can maybe give you some perspective, perhaps the Daffodil Centre is the perfect place.
Absolutely. Our Daffodil nurses are located around the country in 13 different hospitals, and as you mentioned, in Letterkenny as well. And our Daffodil nurse there is integral to the team in oncology and cancer care in Letterkenny. They work very closely with the multidisciplinary team, the oncologists, the nurses there. And so they can help to signpost you towards support groups, towards community cancer centres, and help you maybe to navigate some of those difficult conversations that you may have to do during a cancer diagnosis.
It's a very important issue. And Amy, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning on that. Amy Nolan is the Director of Clinical Services with the Irish Cancer Society. I mean, and the message that you really want people to take away from this, Amy, is look, if you're in a situation where you or someone close to you has been diagnosed, if you need to speak to relatives, need to speak especially to children, there are supports out there. It's not something to be afraid of. It's something to have open and honest communication about. And the more we communicate openly, the better off we are.
Absolutely. The less fear there is around cancer. And I think that's really important, particularly for children. They are going to hear it in the playground. They're going to hear it from neighbours. So it's really important that you manage that message in the way that you want them to hear it. Our support line, again, just is 1-800-200-700 for our cancer nurses, if anybody would like to call them today.
And cancer.ie is the overall website. And as we said, the Daffodil Centre at Letterkenny University Hospital, it's close to where the old outpatients used to be, if I recall correctly. It's in that, I mean, the hospital changed so much over the past couple of years. Yes. But it's there and it's another resource.
Anybody can pop in there. Yeah. You know, it can be relatives as well. So it's important to say, because relatives do want to support their family members, that it is a really good opportunity for them. Maybe if a relative is having their treatment in the day ward in Letterkenny, that the relative could go down and have a chat with the Daffodil nurse. And I think that's really extra added support that's very valuable to them.
And Ina Barrett will never forgive me if I don't point out that you can also get great support by walking around a field at the ATU in Letterkenny on the last weekend of May for 24 hours, starting on May 25th at 4 o'clock. Amy, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And hopefully you've given some encouragement and given some, given some optimism, hopefully, to people as well. Because, yeah. It isn't what it used to be. And we can speak about this openly, and we can speak about this, we can get through this, and we can come out the other side and live normal lives. And that is what this is all about. Amy Nolan, thank you very much. Now, I want to move on to another issue entirely. And Donegal Garda Sergeant Eamon Griffin has been honoured with a Silver Scott Medal. It's a medal that's offered for acts of heroism and courage. And Sergeant Eamon Griffin joins me on the line. Eamon, good morning.
Good morning.
Eamon, it's a story that I certainly recall covering, and people will recall hearing it. In Glenties in February 2020, reports came through that a gunman was effectively on a rampage in Glenties. And it was a story that sort of made a lot of people go, what? But you're one of the people who were on the scene, and you played a key role in actually defusing that situation. Tell us what happened.
That's right. It was in February 2020. It was Friday night, Saturday morning, which is normally a quiet night in Glenties. But we got reports of shots being fired on the main street. So myself and another Garda, Louis Brown, drove down the main street to investigate it, what was happening. But we couldn't see anybody, but we got reports from passerbys about shots being fired. One fella who was driving a car down the street had a shot fired at him. The bullet went in through the back window, went through the front headrest, and out through the front windscreen. So as we were down the street, our other patrol car with Kieran and Emmett Cassidy and Noel Gavigan had blocked off the lower end of the street. It's just the one main street. And this man then was spotted walking around the street with a gun. It transpired later on that he had fired. He was picking out houses like at random, say if the lights were on upstairs. He'd fire a shot through the window of the house, completely indiscriminate. So we had him cornered off at this stage, and we didn't approach him because we were waiting for armed assistance, which came from the Gardaí in Milford, came to our assistance, and we had him cornered off, and he fired shots at ourselves, narrowly missing us. And he also fired, we took cover behind the flow car, and he fired a shot in through the front one screen of the flow car, and the bullet embedded in the dashboard of the car. Now, the weapon he was using was a high-powered hunting rifle. It had a telescopic sight, which also had night vision capabilities. So we had him surrounded, and there was a standoff for about 5 minutes, which seemed like a lifetime. And eventually, he came out, he surrendered. We approached him, disarmed him, and took the gun off him, and he was arrested. Now, I will say it was a very frightening experience for everybody in the town, and it was very lucky that nobody was seriously injured or killed.
Yeah, and management, and it has to be said, your management of the situation was one of the key factors that meant that no one was seriously injured or killed. Now, we know when indiscriminate bullets are being fired, tragedy can befall. Thankfully, that didn't happen on this occasion, but certainly the situation did have to be managed, and you have been honoured for the way you managed it.
That's correct, yeah. It was, it required this fella to be cordoned off, first of all. Our biggest priority was to make sure none of the public, none of the people driving down the street, none of the people walking on the street were injured, you know. So that's why it was important for us to get them cordoned off and to contain the situation until we had assistance arriving at the stage. It did require management, all right, to do that.
Your response to the award of the Scott Medal is that you had to do what you were trained to do, which seems to me to be seriously underplaying your role and underplaying your achievement.
Yeah, it was. You are trained for that, but it's like everything, when it actually happens, it's a completely different scenario. It's a very fluid situation, and things can change very quickly. So that's why you have to allow for that and try to manage that when it's happening.
And I suppose too, and you know, as we said, this was a very bizarre experience. I can't recall too many other experiences like that, and I've been covering news in this part of the country for in excess of 30 years. But I suppose really one of the things about being a Garda or being a sergeant in particular is, you know, the chances are it's going to be a quiet night in Glenties, or it's going to be a quiet night wherever you happen to be stationed, but maybe it won't be, and you have to be ready for the night it's not.
Yeah, so this particular incident, I have never heard of it happening before in my life, like in any town in Ireland, and it was extremely, extremely unusual. But it goes to show you, like any town or anywhere in the country now, you have to be prepared for these things to happen, you know.
And it has to be said, the individual concerned was stopped, detained, arrested, has been through the courts and is currently serving an 8-year prison sentence. And, you know, this could have ended up easily in he being fatally injured as well. I mean, as you say, armed response was on the way. And, you know, we certainly don't want to hear reports of a Garda shooting in Donegal. And, you know, that didn't happen either. And that, too, is testament to the fact that Gardaí not only managed to preserve life of the local community, Gardaí also managed to preserve the life of the perpetrator.
That's right. Any one of us, there was a number of guards working that night, and any one of us could have been shot. And likewise, any one of the people in the town that night could have been shot. And thankfully, they weren't. And thankfully, we were able to apprehend the culprit without him being injured either, you know. So it was a pretty successful operation at the end of the night.
Sergeant Eamon Griffin, congratulations indeed on being awarded the Scott Medal, and you're the AGSI General Secretary Anthony Cunningham saying by its very nature the work of An Garda Síochána is dangerous and predictable, but you and your other Garda colleagues put your own lives at risk to safeguard, protect and serve your community that night. The leadership and bravery shown will never be forgotten. It's only right that you are honoured, and the AGSI are very proud of you, and I've no doubt that Brendan O'Connor and his colleagues in the GRA are very proud of their members that were involved on the night as well. And to you, all we can do is say thank you very much indeed, and long may Gardaí continue to show the tact in managing a situation that you showed on that night in February 2020.
Thanks very much. It was a great honour to receive this award, I'm very thankful to be here to receive it. So thank you very much.
Absolutely, Eamon. It's been wonderful to talk to you. It's been our pleasure, and congratulations again. Thank you.
Okay.
That's Sergeant Eamon Griffin there receiving the Scott Medal for bravery, and Eamon telling the story there in a very matter-of-fact way that I suspect is seriously underplaying the role he played and his colleagues played in defusing and managing that situation. As we say, everybody walked away from there alive, and that so easily might not have been the case. It's the Lines of Noon Show on Highland Radio. We're coming up to 10 o'clock news with Michaela and the obituary notices to follow. We'll take a short break, and we will see you after that, but do please stay tuned for the news.